Baladijasurinmitra,
Baladijasurinmitra,
Pitri Bratri Guru Druha,
Pitri Bratri Guru Druha,
Nameshyan Nirayan Moksha,
Nameshyan Nirayan Moksha,
Yapi Varsha Yuta Yutaihi,
Yapi Varsha Yuta Yutaihi,
Baladijasurinmitra,
Baladijasurinmitra,
Pitri Bratri Guru Druha,
Pitri Bratri Guru Druha,
Nameshyan Nirayan Moksha,
Nameshyan Nirayan Moksha,
Yapi Varsha Yuta Yutaihi,
Yapi Varsha Yuta Yutaihi,
Baladijasurinmitra,
Baladijasurinmitra,
Pitri Bratri Guru Druha,
Pitri Bratri Guru Druha,
Nameshyan Nirayan Moksha,
Nameshyan Nirayan Moksha,
Yapi Varsha Yuta
Yutaihi, Yapi Varsha Yuta Yutaihi.
Translation: I have killed many boys, Brahmins, well-wishers, friends, parents, preceptors, and brothers. Though I live millions of years, I will not be relieved from the hell that awaits me for all these sins. Purport: whenever there is a war, there is certainly a massacre of many innocent living beings, such as boys, Brahmins, and women, whose killing is considered to be the greatest of sins. They are all innocent creatures, and in all circumstances, killing of them is forbidden in the scriptures. Maharaj Yudhishthira was aware of these mass killings. Similarly, there were friends, parents, and preceptors also on both sides, and all of them were killed. It was simply horrible for him to think of such killing, and therefore was thinking of residing in hell for millions and billions of years. Yudhishthira Maharaj is very, you see his soft-heartedness. He's very qualified. He's very powerful. He's qualified to be the emperor of the world. But we see that he is also very disturbed by the situation that he finds himself in. That to put himself on the throne, then now he is, you know, this great war is there, and then so many people are there. So he feels that this is not, you know, appropriate like that for him. So the whole idea is that even though he's a great administrator, right, he can manage the whole world, but still the detail of the personal element, right, means that somebody is conscious of the relationships that are going on under his care, then that's very important. Right? Sometimes management, we get very absorbed in the management itself, and the management itself kind of like takes all importance. But actually, management is just one of the mediums for dealing in relationships. Right? The Vedic culture means you're dealing with relationships. Right? That's what's going on. It's not an economic system. It's not a managerial system. It's a system for understanding one's relationship with other living entities, and then how to properly act in that relationship. Right? Does that make sense? Right, that's what Varnashram is. So Kshatriyas will use administration for that, for the medium. Brahmins will use knowledge for the medium. Vaishyas will use money for the medium. Shudras will use their work for the medium. Does this make sense? You want to have an exchange with somebody. There must be some medium that's used, right? Some language, some gift, some kind of interaction must be there. Does that make sense? Otherwise, how do you express the relationship? Right? You may feel there's a relationship, but unless there's interaction, how will it know? Right? There may be some personality, others may appreciate them, but unless there's an interaction, how will it be known, this relationship? Does that make sense? Right? So the king, through protection, right, because Kshatriyas, what they do is protect. That's their medium. So they protect in this way, then they have a relationship with the whole kingdom. Right? Does that make sense? So, you know, they'll give support to other kshatriyas below them. They're making it a protective environment in which the vaishyas can perform their work. Naturally, then, if it's protected, shudras will feel comfortable. The brahmins can do their studies and teaching. Right? So they create a favorable environment for everyone to perform their duties. So here he's feeling, as the king who's supposed to protect, then there is... that has not happened, so he doesn't have his proper relationship with anyone, right? Due to lack of protection, and so many people have died, right? They're supposed to maintain that protection, but here, then he's feeling that it hasn't happened, right? So then he feels he's let all these people down. And here, then, mentioning boys, Brahmins, women, he says, such as, you know, like that, innocent living beings, because it's being seen that In principle, then, you know, they just perform their duties. Boys are young, they get enthusiastic, they don't know what's going on. The Brahmins, then, they are teaching, they're studying, very important what they're doing. So it's not that, like, as Krishna and them are trying to convince them that, you know, these boys were warriors, you know, it's like they were 16 years old, so they're full adults, you know, like Abhimanyu and all that. And Brahmins, but they were acting as kshatriyas, in like Drona, Acharya, like this. So but he's not seeing it like that. He's just seeing it, what is their natural position, what's his natural relationship, and that relationship has not happened. Right? Does that make sense? So the whole Vedic culture then is very personal. The whole idea is how to work with, how to deal with other people. Right? That's what the whole point is. That's what's going on. It's not that it's just, you know, how to nicely organize things and that. No, organization is there. It means the more nice you want the environment or experience, the more organization, right? Does that make sense? Like you have this temple room. A lot of organization went into it, right? You know, building the place, choosing all the different things, the colors, the arrangements, the aesthetics. And because of that, then there's more of an experience. Does that make sense? Right. Yes. Right. So, and if you could do this, you know, you have, you know, something like carved stone or jewels or this or that, then it increases it even more. Right. So, therefore, we can see is the more sophisticated and developed the social structure, that the more, how do you say, the greater the experience that can be brought out of it. Does that make sense? So in this case, it's not just the facilities, but it's the interaction. Because you have nice facilities, okay, that's between you and the building, right? Or it creates a nice atmosphere in which you could relate to the other people. But unless you have a system for doing that, relating to other people, then will it happen? Right? Does that make sense? You have a great place of worship that is very ornate. You know, you have the best artisans of the, you know, of the world are making it. But at the same time, as if somebody doesn't have your exact religious feelings, and they're being, you know, drowned or burnt at the stake. You know what I'm saying? So it's not exactly, it means when you walk into that place of worship, one is definitely awed and, you know, inspired by, you know, just the work that's there and the fineness and, you know, what energy has got into it. Some of these places, you know, tens, twenties, hundreds of years of work has gone into them. So there definitely, there's a lot of energy there. There's something very inspiring there. But there's not a science for how to deal with people. Right? Be compassionate, be nice, right? So if we're compassionate and nice, then why so many people are being burnt at the stake? You know what I'm saying? So the system's not there. There is no system. You know what I'm saying? If we ask, you know, just in the general religion, what is the, according to the religion itself, what is the way you greet another person? Right? Like, we have a way of greeting, right? You meet somebody, say something, offer obeisances. You know, there's a method. The other one, it's developed. But generally you see it's just come out of something else. I think the shaking of hands is a Roman thing, you know, so like that. You know, they would clasp, I think, the forearm, you know, so now it's moved back to the hand, right? So like that. So, or dress, right? Or food, or family interaction, or, you know what I'm saying? So other than a few basic morality things, just be good, be nice, be compassionate, like that, be dutiful, right? You know, be cultured, but cultured means whatever the local culture is. You know what I'm saying? So there isn't one. Therefore, you see, there's not necessarily a very deep interaction with others, because how do you know how to deal? So you'll just deal whatever is your local way of dealing. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So the Vedic culture is meant that you know how to deal with others, and what depths that can be taken. Right? You have a method on how you can interact, because unless there's interaction, how will the relationship be appreciated? Right? And so much of the time is, how do you do that? Right? You know, like, let's say you're in an elevator, right? And somebody else walks in the elevator. What are you supposed to do? You know, do you look at the floor? Do you look at the shoes? Do you look off in space? You know, do you say hello? Do you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? Right? So that's the problem. There's no medium for interaction, right? That's the amazing thing, right? There's so many elevators, and elevators have been around for quite a long time, but the Western culture has not developed a system of interaction for the elevator. Right? Quite amazing, actually. You know? Because it doesn't really have one. It's just kind of hoping that people will get together and hoping something will happen. You know what I'm saying? So the Western culture creates much opportunity for people to get together, right? There's all kinds of programs and parties and you know, you're on a bus or an elevator, or there's a million of you on the escalator or in the underground or something, but it still hasn't generated any way to interact, just like it hasn't generated a specific, you know, lifestyle or food or dress or, you understand? It's just hoping that by the modes of nature, something will happen. So you feel lucky, you know, you're in a whole crowd and you actually talk to somebody and actually made a contact and, you know, some relationship is established and you actually feel fortunate, you know? So it's kind of like by luck, by chance, right? Even though it's a culture that supposedly is dedicated to, you know, people and relationship and interaction and all. Does that make sense? So what we can see is that it's the rules that actually make the ability to interact. You know, what is your relationship, so you know how to interact. Does that make sense? So then it's very clear. Does that make sense? So that's what it's trying to do. The sophistication there is because then every relationship can be defined. Right? Well, in the modern society, only a few relationships are kind of defined, and even them, it's by chance, kind of. You know, there's a theory that, okay, parents are supposed to be respected or appreciated by the children, you know, but on what authority can they even say that? Right? Other than religious. Right? Only religions say that you should, you know, respect your parents. Right? But in the modern secular society, then what is the authority on which they're basing that you should respect your parents? So therefore, how do you make a strong stand and say this is what the relationship is? So therefore, when it falls apart and they're not respecting, then everybody knows that it's not good, but no one can really say anything. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, oh, they don't do this, but, you know what I'm saying? There's no basis. So the whole thing we see is that religion actually is for establishing relationships, right? And the whole social structure, and in the Vedic culture, religion goes beyond just those rituals of what is your particular faith. They go completely into your lifestyle, right? Modern religions, very few of them dictate very greatly what you do. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of them, there's no restriction on what you eat. Okay, it's kind of generally accepted you don't eat people. Okay. But other than that, then it doesn't really matter. Right? You know, and some of them will restrict, okay, you don't eat pigs or something, right? But, you know, but other than that, then it's not so much developed, right? But then you see some religions, they are. You know, you have to be vegetarian or, you know, means you can't eat, you know, pigs, and you can't eat, shellfish and some other things like this. Anything that's considered impure, like that. So then there's more restriction, but then you see those cultures that have more of a tight social interaction. Right? That makes sense? So that's the whole idea of these restrictions, is to generate relationship. So Yudhishthira Maharaj feels that since he didn't protect the people, therefore that relationship's not there, so therefore he's let all these people down. So then he's feeling very bad. Right? About that, because he's supposed to protect. And so he's looking at it, you know, just from their position. Right? Because, you know, boys, Brahmins, well-wishers, friends, parents, preceptors, brothers, they're all somebody you respect, all somebody you deal with nicely, properly. You know, you protect, you take care of, you're close with, you're intimate with. Right? So all these persons have been killed. Of course, they were warriors, right? And warriors do have brothers, they do have their gurus, they do have their friends, they do have... But generally, you know, on the battlefield, they're looked at as just as other warriors. You don't look at them as that, well, he's somebody's brother, or he's somebody's father, or... You know what I'm saying? So... Therefore, by Krishna's arrangement, he's looking at it this way, so that he becomes bewildered. You know, it's pointed out so then he can hear the instructions of Bhishma Dev. But but he's still looking at the relationship part, not at the artha, okay? Because otherwise then, you know, within Dharma there must be gain, so a king must, you know, gain. So kingdoms he doesn't have, he must gain, you know, if it's necessary for protecting his people. So then he gains the kingdom, and then after that then he, you know, makes things work. So here he's gained the kingdom, so now he can perform his duties and protect the people. But he's not looking at it from artha, he's looking at it from Dharma, right? That so many people that have all these natural relationships that should be able to be appreciated, then by this war, then they were all killed. And so then, where is his relationship with these people as the protector? Like that. Okay. Any questions on this? Yes?
Maharaj, does that mean that as a devotee advances, then his relationship should also deepen with God and others? Is that a symptom of
advancement, is the deepening of relationships? Yes, it would naturally be, you know. It means, of course, there is the element of if one's aware of that, you know. But at least the potential would be there. So if one, you know, did become aware, then it would naturally happen. But it should be that as you advance, then you naturally appreciate other persons, because as you advance means you're actually becoming more personal, right? We start from basically the impersonal platform. Impersonal here doesn't mean we don't believe that there's people there, right? We walk down the street, we do move around the people. We don't just see them as, you know, other obstacles of, you know, like here, like there's a pillar, there's a car, there's a person, there's a, like that. What it means is that our relationship with them, that it's inactive. You know what I'm saying? We can identify who it is, but we do nothing to interact. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Then also is in the relationship, we see it that it always must be from the other person to ourselves. Right? It means I'm who I am, everybody else should be relating to me. Right? So that's fine, but the only problem is the that contradicts our consciousness that I am the controller and enjoyer. Right? Because controller and enjoyer is masculine. And I'm the center of attention, and everybody should relate to me on my platform. That's feminine. Right? So when someone takes both simultaneously masculine and feminine mentality, how do you interact? Right? Because masculine has to go to feminine, feminine goes to masculine. But if you're taking them both at one time, therefore that's why nothing works, why nobody interacts. You know what I'm saying? So it's a problem. It's not actually understood what is a person, right? It means to be a personalist means you know what people are. An impersonalist means you don't know what people are. Right? They're just some energy, right? In a personalist, it's all Brahman. Right? So here it's just all people, right? And there's people, there's birds, there's dogs, there's cars, there's cats, there's, you know, shoes, there's, you know, there's like that. So it's a category. But unless you operate the field, then nothing happens. Does that make sense? So that's the basic problem that goes on in the modern culture, is that we don't know how to interact because we don't know. So the naturally, as you advance, you become more aware of the individual, you know, soul and their individual choice, you know, to serve, you know, Krishna or not, but it's an individual who's making that choice. So then you start appreciating more. So it's not even just God brothers, you'll find it's even people in general, living entities in general. It's that, you know, you're just more conscious of and more aware and more cultured with, like that. So even the karmis, because karmis are devotees that just don't know they're devotees or are very adamant to not know they're devotees. You know, they're quite fixed to not be aware of that. But they're still devotees, you know. They don't act like it, but, you know, that happens. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. Something else? Yeah. Did you have something else connected with that?
Yeah, it was just, what's the second next one now? But it was about, like, leaders within spiritual movement.
Uh-huh.
With Maharaj used to be showing example of a chapter. So with, as far as I can understand, we're more inclined to try to be Brahmins.
Yes.
So how does a Brahmin act as a leader?
Leader means here. Leader, then, this is, it's a very important element in relationships. Leadership means you're doing what actually you want others to do. And you, basically, leadership means you do first what you want your people to do. Right? We very much what gets messed up is our false concept of what masculinity is. Right? Is that the living entity has this Purusha Bhava. Purusha means male, right? And so, we're God, right? Because he's the male. So we have a false identity of what Purusha is. You know, it's just like you see little kids when they play, you know, the king or some big person. You see it's really, really overacted and overdone, and the things they do aren't necessarily, you know, what a king would do. But it just kind of sets the mood that there's some control and some enjoy there, you know, whatever it is, you know, in their, you know, childish way. But does that make sense? But you see it. So it's not really that much different for the adults. A little bit more sophisticated, but basically the same principle, right? Adults are, I mean, it's another discussion of whether adults are big kids or kids are just little adults. But whatever it is, you know, there's something interesting there. So the living entity has this idea of what's God, but it's not actually real because we're looking at it as energy or as the created. We're feminine. We're dependent upon the masculine, so we're feminine. So we have all those values and needs of femininity. that we then try to readjust to be in control. So basically, it's the biggest, nastiest lady is in charge, is kind of what we're doing, you know, like that. So that's why much of the time leadership roles in an untrained society, it means a non-Vedic society, has that kind of, you know, canine-ish element to it, you know, like that. And that's generally what is the designation for the, you know, biggest, nastiest, in charge lady, right? Is the, you know, the feminine aspect of the, you know, canine mentality, right? So that's generally our definition of what's male, you know, tough, nasty, doesn't care, cool, you know, like that. But that's actually not, because that means everybody still has to recognize you. They have to appreciate that you're cool. They have to approach you to establish, because you're so cool, they have to approach you. But that's not leadership, because you're dependent upon the other person to operate the relationship. So whoever is the making the how do you say the not a, taking that first step, it's the positive form of like being aggressive or being bold, or you know what I'm saying?
Initiative.
Yeah, whoever is taking the initiative, you know, like that, that's the masculine element. It means feminine is passive. Masculine is takes the initiative. Does that make sense? But it's supposed to take the initiative in a way that's beneficial for the passive. Does that make sense? Right? So that's masculine. Right? So therefore, then looking at it, leadership is an element of masculinity. Right? In that the leader takes the initiative and they do what they want their people or whoever's their dependents are to do. Right? Does that make sense? So then if a leader wants the devotees to have a service attitude, he has one. Right? If he wants them to be humble, he is. Being humble doesn't mean you lose the position, because we take it from the mode of ignorance that the masculine or leadership is just being cool and you know, not being in any way able to be exploited or somehow or another is in control, you know. But actually it's who takes the lead. Does that make sense? So if the leadership takes the humble mood, that doesn't make them any less leadership. You know, it means that actually makes them the leader, because they were humble first. You became humble second, seeing their humility. That makes you the follower. You understand? So basically what happens is the concept we have of whatever is anything you could call masculine, you know, it's actually opposite of what it actually is. You know? What we will say is feminine is not, no, it's done in its proper way, then that means that initiative done for the benefit of the other or the protection of the other, based on the nature of the other person, right? That's masculine. Does that make sense? Very different than how we would define it, you know? You know, so then it will have elements of, you know, strength, this, because you have to have strength to take the initiative. You have to have strength to be determined to continue taking initiative. Right? Does that make sense? You know, that you have to have that determination, you have to have that focus, you have to have... So then you could bring in all, but in there, cool, tough, mean, nasty, aren't words that actually describe masculinity. You know? Like that. Because you could apply those same things to women. Right? You know, the lady in the shades down in the corner, and you say, "Hey, babe," and she says, "My name's not babe." You know, that's cool. That's tough. You know, you know. So you could apply that. You know. So leadership means what it is you want everybody else to do. You're doing that, or if you can't do that because you know management is big enough that means if it's small, let's say you're doing a maha cleaning and everybody's doing some work and okay, you're going to clean the kitchen, so then you're cleaning the kitchen with a couple of people and you give other people, so then you're doing the thing. But if it's so big that to make it actually function, you would have to be going around and seeing and encouraging and checking standards that you can't do the cleaning. But it should be that you are willing or even enthusiastic about cleaning, though you have to take this role. Does that make sense? So if you can clean, others will clean. Right? So if you're humble, they'll be humble. You have a service attitude, they'll have a service attitude. You have good sadhana, they'll have good sadhana. You know, it's just like this. It's not that you have to artificially set the example. You know, it's not that it means... Well, artificial wouldn't be the word. It would be... Yeah, well, artificial would be is the situation wouldn't necessarily work out that way, but you would do that, unless it's necessary, you know, to set an example. Let's say, so obviously performing all of your activities in front of everybody else. Okay, if that's favorable and that's natural, yes, you would do that. But let us say that it wouldn't be, you know, then it wouldn't necessarily be. So does that make some sense? Yeah. Okay. Is that getting somewhere? What leadership is? So this element applies to anything that's leadership. So this would apply as someone in a position of authority, that, you know, this would apply as a parent, this would apply as a husband, you know, this would apply as, let's say, an older brother, it would apply anything where there is that element of seniority, then it starts there. They take the initiative, right? Like that. Is that okay? Is that understood? Like that. Because if this point is understood, then much of relationships would correct themselves like that. Right? Like that. But much of the time we think because I'm the senior, the other one has to cave in first. Right? But actually it's not like that. It's that if there's an impasse in the relationship, you take the step first. That's leadership. So therefore, you feel the other person is wrong, so you want them to be humble. So therefore, in it, that there is an impasse means there's something you've done wrong. Maybe not the activity, but maybe the mentality. Or maybe you did nothing wrong, but they perceived that you did something wrong. So then you deal with that perception. And you come first and then, you know, apologize for how it works, but not in a way that, you know, proves that you're right. No, you just leave that because you don't want them to continue and prove they're right. You want them to drop it, so therefore you drop it. And so then approaching in that way, then it breaks it. So then they'll follow, right? Because the natural thing is if you've taken that position, then after they're comfortable that it's, you know, that this is, you know, real or sincere, then they'll also take that same position. And they'll admit, you know, yes, I was wrong here, or this or that, or, you know. Does that make sense? So that's leadership. Leadership means those who are willing to get out there and do it first and take responsibility for their actions. Then that's a leader. Managers should be able to do similar kinds of things, but basically they just have to get done what a leader does. But still they're out there and they take responsibility, you know. So if they're leading in it, or, I mean, they'll always be leading because they're managing, but it may be their plan or not. Maybe there's someone who's making the plan, they're carrying it out, or it may be their own plan, depending upon. So there may be more or less the element of leadership, you know, like that. You know, it's just like, let's say, the temple president you would take as the leader, while the vice president you would take, he's also a manager, but not necessarily the leader. But when he executes the plans that are worked out with the president, he is leading. You know, so the principle still applies, so it may or may not be their plan. Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah, there's some other point. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then we were saying, so that's leaders, that's managers. Then you have bureaucrats. Bureaucrats are ones that hide behind rules. They make rules because they can't lead, and probably they can't manage. So they make rules by which others are obliged to follow. So you can see it's actually a feminine position. It's a weak position. So, but they make so many rules that it kind of like creates their little fortress by which they can sit inside and then dictate what people should do. But unfortunately, the main weakness of bureaucracy being in the prominent position is that the rule does not generally adjust for time, place, and circumstance in the individual. So therefore, it's said in the Shastra that if a leader does not distinguish between his subordinates, he will fail. If he treats everybody the same, he will fail. It means, in other words, he has those who are confident, those who are not. But if he treats those who are not in the confidential position as confidants, then he'll be ruined. Or he has people that should be his confidants, but he doesn't, then he'll fail. You know, or he gives, the same amount of wealth for any activity. Someone does great work and he gets that facility. Someone does very little, he gets the same facility. Or someone, the opposite. You know what I'm saying? So if he treats them the same, then there'll be a problem. So bureaucrats tend to treat everyone the same. Because you can't make up rules as fast as you need to apply them. Right? Because application means in the moment, right now, what's going on, this moment. So that a bureaucrat can't deal with. So that's why bureaucrats serve managers and leaders. But as soon as the bureaucracy takes over, then you have yourself one unhappy social structure that has no direction. And they can't give shelter either. That's the other thing. A leader can give shelter. Managers can give protection. Bureaucrats can't. Because no one's responsible. So you have authority without responsibility. That's cheating. So if you have no responsibility, technically you have no authority. Your authority is actually only what you are designated to do by a leader. Right? Then it's fine. You have no responsibility because technically you have no authority. But you're authorized to do a certain activity. So you're responsible to do your activity, but you're not responsible for the results of that activity because that's coming from the leader. Does that make sense? So that would be, that's the proper, definition. So the masculine element, that's leadership, right? And those who follow, that's feminine. So the bureaucrat is, because the bureaucrat's a Shudra, right? So that makes it feminine by nature. Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya will be masculine. Shudra will be feminine because they assist the other. So they assist managers and leaders like that. Does that make sense? So one is a leader and manager if one understands the male role. And one is a good bureaucrat if one understands the feminine. The problem is what happens generally is bureaucrats work very hard to create, to feminize the leadership and to masculinize the bureaucracy. That's why bureaucracies never in history have ever worked. There must be leaders. Is that okay? Yeah. Yeah.
Where does
chastisement
come in?
Chastisement means chastisement is important, that it's for correcting, the mentality or correcting the application, of an activity or, some interaction. So therefore the chastisement, that also can't be the same, always the same, always. It has to be adjusted according to the time, place, and circumstance. So that's why sometimes there may be a very minor thing, but the person that you're dealing with can do something very, very developed or very refined or very expert. And so you might be more strict with on a finer point with someone who is more qualified, and you might be more lenient with the person who's less qualified, right? If it's just because they don't know, they don't, you know, but the sincerity is there. But if insincerity is there, then it might reverse. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So you have a person who doesn't really know this and that, but if they're not sincere, they're not really trying, then to awaken them to the importance of it, then they might need to be quite strong. But while someone who is qualified and for, you know, some moment or something, there was a lapse in focus, you know, something happened, they thought they were distracted by, you know, they were sick, or there's some problem with the house, or there's some other work that was there, they were thinking, so they didn't pay attention, so then something may have gone wrong, you know, and so therefore, at that point, then you just kind of leave it, because they know what's proper behavior and know how to behave, but just they how we would say spaced out. So therefore, then they are mature enough to know the importance of it, so they'll correct themselves. But let's say someone who isn't as expert or developed, then they don't really know what is the standard and don't really have a way to self-correct themselves. So you might have to be stronger to impress upon them the importance of it, otherwise they won't endeavor. Like that. Does that make sense? So you really have to judge what is the mood, the situation, the personality themselves. Like some people can't handle criticism or anything heavy. So then you always use niceness. That works for them. With someone else, then they're very spaced out, but, you know, very pure and everything. You can sometimes be very heavy because it wakes them up and makes them very fixed and firm. So you just have to see what works for which person, like that. But generally, you would always use the softer one, and then if that doesn't work, move to heavier and heavier, right? You know, you don't get out of, I think the example is, you don't get out a cannon for a fly, you know, like that. You know, they start small, and then, you know, if you find out it's some kind of nuclear fly or something, then maybe you get out of your cannons, you know, like that. Does that make sense? Okay. You had something, G. Yeah.
We had a class a few weeks ago from the Guru Maharaj, he was saying that Brahmins don't tolerate any pain. And then we hear that Brahmins can take on the position of Kshatriyas, because that's another position. So how is it that they can take that position?
How would a Brahmin take that position? But that's a Brahmin whose field is the Kshatriya field. You understand? There's 14 books of Vedic knowledge, right? So that expands from, you know, philosophy right down to, you know, your social structure, you know, philosophy, academics, then right down into all the social and social detail, like that. So if the social detail is, you know, Dharma and Kshatriya, you know, activities and the martial sciences, then because they deal in that field, then you might find they're a little tougher. Right? You know what I'm saying? That's all. But let's say someone who's just dealing in Sanskrit or even just Dharma Shastra without the martial side, then they'll be more gentle. It'll be, you know, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Something else? Yes.
Comment on the use of the word innocent.
Yeah.
So sometimes.
Innocent. Oh, what does that mean, innocent? Innocent generally would mean that they're affected by the modes and they can't not be affected by the modes. Right? Or it's very, they're more prone to be affected by them. Right? Like children. They're not really aware of the results of the activities. They just live in the moment, you know, like that. So here, for instance, or it may be purity, right? You know what I'm saying? So either purity or the inability to how you say, not be controlled by the modes. You know, either one of those are a combination. So here, Brahmins then generally being, because of their purity. So they're innocent. They have no material need, desire, so they're not trying to politically do something or get somewhere or something. So therefore, they're innocent. You know, children may be like that also sometimes. Or ladies might be like that also sometimes. Or it may be that the modes of nature are such, therefore the kids are just hungry now, they have to eat now, you know, everybody else is doing something else, right? You know, it's Bhagavatam class, the caste kid is hungry, they gotta eat now. So the mother picks them up, takes them outside, feeds them something. Because in that way they're innocent, you know, they can't not be, they need protection. So that would be probably another way of looking at it, is just those that need protection, right? Because they're not the responsible ones, they're not the leaders. Right, the leaders are the ones that create the environment in which others can function. Right? Does that make sense? Right. Yeah, it means these persons are dependent upon someone else to create the environment in which they can prosper. Does that make sense? So Brahmins are independent, but because they function, in one sense, outside the system. Right? But at the same time as when they work within the system, they have to be protected. Right? It means, Manu mentions that if a Brahmin has a problem with a Kshatriya, or with someone else, he doesn't go to the kings and get them to straighten out. He's independent. He just takes care of himself. Right? There's plenty of yajnas, you know, that he can perform, you know, to you know, how you say, correct the other person. Right? They're giving enough trouble then. You know, this, like you see, is that Tvashta, I think he, you know, did a yajna to correct Indra for, you know, killing his son. He didn't go to, you know, Brahma or anybody else. He's independent and powerful enough to do it. Problem is in performing the yajna, then one syllable was said wrong, so he ended up with, instead of an enemy of Indra, you know, someone who Indra was his enemy. Like that. So, you know, that also happens, but you know what I'm saying? But generally within the system, then the Kshatriya protects. So that's why the Kshatriya is like the father of everyone. And then from that protection, if he protects the Brahmins, he actually gets 1/6 of all their spiritual credit. Right? So if the government protects the Brahmins and protects the devotees, then 1/6 of their spiritual benefit they get. Right? And but if they don't, then they get all your bad qualities. So, and either way, you know, it works out. Either you get protected or they take on your bad qualities. Either one. Does that make some sense? Or?
It's just when the devotees have given classes on this subject before, it's often the use of the word innocence sometimes causes some controversial issue over whether anyone is innocent or not, excluding the myth of the innocence citizen.
Of course. I mean, it's like this. Do you want to see the social structure and know what is the relationship, which is on the platform of Manamoy, right? That's religion. Or do you want to drop it to Upadharma or sub-religion or the platform of morality and justice and economics? And then, you know, because of what benefit is it to saying exploding the myth of the innocent citizen? Of what good does that do? It points out that all people are bad. But the point is citizenry means there's a leader, right? A citizen means they're a member of some community in which there is leadership that is responsible. So exploding the myth of innocence does not in any way get established leadership. What is the duty of the citizen? And what is the duty of the leader to do that? All it does is make it now the leader can, you know, wash their hands and say, well, what to do? All the people are corrupt. You know what I'm saying? So it's actually cheating. You can bring out, yes, no one's innocent, everybody is responsible for their own activities, but that's not a myth. That's each soul is responsible for their own position. It means each soul has free will. So by their free will, they put themselves in whatever situation they're in. So they can in that way say they're innocent and blame someone else. That you can say. That's philosophy. You know, that's how we work. So that means that everybody then must take responsibility for their spiritual development. But the point is having said that, there are those persons that are more in a position by their conditioning to do that for themselves and help others who are unable to do that for themselves. Like a child technically is not innocent. It means he is an old person that didn't make go back to Godhead, so now he's come again, right? You know, so you could say that. But they're not in a position where they really know, they're not trained, they don't really know the effect of the material energy in that, so they must be protected, they must be guided, because they're actually innocent, they don't really know the effects of the material energy. So, it's a matter of if you want to set yourself apart from everybody else, to establish that no one is innocent, but how is the person that's making the statement innocent? You know what I'm saying? Because generally, it's by if you point out someone else's fault, it's the automatic how you say inference is you're okay. If I can point out someone else's fault, it means I'm good. If I can point out, oh wow, look how that person's dressed, means I know what dressing is and I'm dressed okay. Right? It may not. You know, you have the guy there, the local teenage grunge, and he's going, wow, look at those guys in the bed sheets, you know, and supposedly he's, you know, wearing the, you know, hot couture or something like that. You know, so it's not exactly. You know what I'm saying? You know, so it would appear very noble to point that out, but actually all it is a position, can be just a position of false ego, in which one is trying to make oneself better by pointing out others' faults. And if everyone's bad, you have no responsibility to do anything about it. Therefore, you're freed from everything. Therefore, I can do whatever I like. You understand? That's the problem with the modern isms. They appear very nice and sweet and very intellectual and very well thought out, but actually underlying, much of the time, they're just very, very self-centered methods to just free yourself from any control of anybody else, and you yourself have complete control. Because if I can point out everyone else is at fault, supposedly also by inference, I'm in control. You know what I'm saying? That's why the modern position of thinking without being connected to the Veda is extremely dangerous. And we're taking, you know, a risk here in saying this, and it doesn't even matter if devotees are saying it. If it's not actually coming from the Vedic perspective, it is dangerous. And it can destroy devotional faith and practices. Like that. You know what I'm saying? Because even though technically it may be correct in technique of application. The technique is not what's important. It's important. It means it's important in the getting of a particular observable result, but it's the motive behind it that's more important. Like Krishna is always saying, do your duty without desire for result. Right? He's not saying, only if you do your duty with material perfection, then you can approach me. No, he's saying perform your duty to the best that you can according to your ability, but do it without desire for result. So that means the whole purpose behind it, that's more important. You know what I'm saying? And he says, do your duty. Duty means then it's based on the scripture, because otherwise, how do you define duty? And like we were saying before, you know, people nowadays say you shouldn't steal. Why not? What's wrong with stealing? You know? So it goes back to a religion that says you shouldn't steal. Right? Or people think it's not good if, you know, the man and woman, you know, the husband and wife aren't faithful to each other. But who says? You know, modern society is sense gratification. Hey, you know, it's like, you know, whatever goes, you know? But no, it's religion says that. So you can see is that anything that creates a proper structure is coming from religion, right? And so then that has, and religion is given by God. So when you say follow duty, duty means religion, right? Varnashram and religion are synonymous. They're not two different terms, right? It's just varnashram means the actual rules of the structure that define what is the proper activity for each nature of somebody. Religion means that you're defining generically what is nature. You know what I'm saying? Like the religion of sugar is sweetness. Right? That's how you identify it's sugar. Or the religion of fire is heat and light. That's how you define that it is fire. Does that make sense? If it doesn't give heat or light, you don't call it fire. Varnashram then is the rules on how to deal, like it's fire, so there's a rule how you deal with it. It's sugar, therefore there's a rule. You know, water's wet, there's rules how to deal with it. You know? Does that make sense? You know, if fire, you want more fire, therefore you have to take the piece of wood and put it on top of the other pieces of wood that are burning. Right? You have fire, you don't want it to grow, therefore anything burnable you keep far away. You understand? That's the religion of fire. So Varnashram is the religion of a human being in whatever stage he may be of you know, how you say, social or spiritual development. Right? So either Brahmacharya Vaishyashudra or Brahmacharya Grihastha Vanaprastha Sannyas. Right? Does that make sense? That's religion. So if it's not so Krishna starts from there, right? Means when Lord Chaitanya was discussing with Ramananda Roy, he didn't start lower than Varnashram. Right? He didn't start at Anamoya Pranamoya, he started at Manamoya. Because lower than that, it's not human. Right? From religion, you can deal with Artha and Kama. Because you're established in religion. So therefore you religiously deal with money and the senses. But if you're not established in religion, you're subhuman. Right? So you'll see generally most all philosophies that are there are subhuman. So all these isms, ism means it's pranamoy. Automatically, it's subhuman. So unless it's connected to Dharma, it will give trouble. Right? Because what is Bhagavatam opens with right in the beginning of the canto, right? I think it's in the second chapter, is Dharma should never be performed for Artha or Kama. And if you get Artha or Kama, you never use them outside of the rules of Dharma. Right? So that means if you're dealing with an ism, if it's not connected to religion, then it's actually irreligious. That's what the second verse of Bhagavatam is talking about. All cheating sub-religions, right? Chala Dharma, that's all kicked out in this Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? Yeah? So it sounds nice, because the point is people who are good at speaking and are smart can come up with very nice sounding stuff. But the point is it actually bona fide? That's a completely different thing. You know what I'm saying? And technically the only difference between being bona fide or not is if it's connected to Krishna or not. You know, you can say it's connected, but you actually have to be able to show how it's connected. You know what I'm saying? So generally that takes, if it's not direct, you have to do it through metaphysics. And generally you won't find metaphysical definitions. It's all moralistic definitions. So it's on the physical platform. So they haven't proved their connection to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like this, if after that point has been made, you feel inspired in your devotional service, then it probably was. If after hearing it, then you become bewildered and lose your, you know, how you say, determination or faith or direction or like that, then that means it wasn't. Right? Does that make sense?
Just in relationship to delivering the form of conditioned souls, if one hears that no one is innocent, therefore everyone needs to be given
Okay, then that's staying, that's there. But what is they're not being innocent? Okay, that's okay. You can say they're not innocent. But the point is that's not the relationship, that they're not innocent. The actual point is they are innocent. Because they actually don't know the force of the material nature and how that they're completely bound by it and they're completely an illusion as to who they are. So they're basically like an animal. Animals are always considered innocent, you know, even if they jump out of the bushes and, you know, eat something. They, you know, they're considered innocent because they actually don't know what's going on. So they're like animals. So they need to be protected from themselves, right? But from that, so therefore they are given, you know, the holy name, they're given prashadam, they're given, you know, an alternative to their lifestyle that therefore binds them. You know what I'm saying? If they're not innocent, okay, that has established where they stand in the field. But now, how do you, then along with that, you have to establish where do you stand in the field? Right? So if they're not innocent, then for you to help them by that definition means you have to be innocent. Or at least a reforming non-innocent. Right? Then you can have a relationship. Otherwise, if they're not innocent, you're not innocent, then what are you going to do for them? You're drowning, they're drowning, what are you going to do for each other? Right? It has to be they're drowning, you're not, you can help them. Right? And so, they're not innocent, then means, then you would have to look at what elements of their non-innocence are they being affected by that you can make them aware of to help them correct so that they can become innocent. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Means, if they're not innocent, means they're going to be not innocent in a particular way. You know, their particular conditioning. So you have to be able to identify that. That's your responsibility. If you're going to point out they're not innocent, it has no meaning unless you can identify what is the form of their non-innocence. Then only you can help them, right? A doctor saying, everybody's sick. Okay, that's nice. But now, if I just say, you know, everybody's sick, everyone's got disease, this body is a place of disease, so everybody's sick. So that's what your general pranamoy, you know, philosopher will do. It doesn't get anyone anywhere. It doesn't make any relationships. It doesn't make anyone feel any better like that. If you're taking to the next stage, like what you said, everybody's sick, so therefore we got to help them. Okay, great. But how do you help them unless you know what the sickness is and what is the treatment for that sickness? Therefore, then, the Vedic culture. Then that means then you click it into the other thing. They're sick because they don't know what makes them sick, right? You know, kids are out playing in the snow and wind and rain and all that. So you could look at it from complete self-centered, you know, wasting their time. You know, little snots that are out there. And so that's why he comes in with a cold. Right? Isn't it? Sorry. But does that help the relationship? No. It's now you have to transfer it as they don't know that the wind and the rain and the snow makes them sick. So they're innocent. You understand? The underlying subconscious, you know, Freudian, you know, how you say, inspiration, you know, may be quite demoniac, you know, while they're out there throwing snowballs at someone else trying to destroy the universe, you know, like that. That's another thing. But they don't know that that makes them sick, right? As one friend, one god brother was telling me, his father used to tell him when he was, you know, young, you know, wild, you know, person. He said, what makes you happy makes you crazy. You know? Like that. So, like that is what makes the kids happy, they don't know is what's making them sick. So they're innocent. So therefore you have to deal with it like that. You can't deal with it, because otherwise how are you going to deal with it? Okay, you're so self-centered and this and that, and you're out there and playing and you don't care for how anybody else feels and you're making yourself sick and that makes us feel bad. And, Is that going to correct the situation? No. The point is that you're out there, you know, you get cold, you have to dress properly. And even if you dress properly, there's only so much you can be out there, you know, before your clothes are completely soaking wet and this and that. So knowing this, therefore you have to come in. You have to, and the solution is making them warm, you know, giving them warm things to eat, putting them in a warm environment, you know, putting on fresh clothes and stuff like that. Does that make sense? So the perception may be that you can identify what's the problem, so therefore you may get down and see the non-innocence. But the application is you have to be able to see the innocence. Otherwise you can't interact. That's why I'm saying it's very dangerous if you don't use these things properly. You know what I'm saying? If the result is you know how to behave, and by behaving the result that is promised comes and it's sustainable, then that's correct. But if it you're not inspired to interact, then what's the use? Right? Because only through action is relationship expressed. And only through relationship are you dealing in rasa. Right? And it's only in, you know, pure rasa that you attain perfection. Right? You don't attain perfection in pure philosophy. It's in pure rasa. So pure philosophy is there to attain pure rasa. Does that make sense? Right? The gopis don't sit around and philosophize. Right? That's the point, is that so knowledge is used to cut the material attachments. Right? Because with intelligence you can cut emotion. Like that. So that's its use. So if it doesn't end up in being able to apply it practically in one's relationship with others, then it may be good philosophy, but it doesn't become practical. You know what I'm saying? And if it bewilders, then it wasn't even good philosophy. Right? Does that make sense? If it goes over your head, okay, but it's correct, that means it's just very technical. Right? But usefulness comes when you understand what it's based on, how to apply it. So that means when you understand the principle behind it, then it makes it applicable. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, I can tell the kid, okay, this coat's not sufficient for going outside. What about that coat, you know? No, that's even thinner, you know, that's even less. So what about that? Oh, that's a sweater, you know. You know, but you haven't taught the kid what he's looking for. You have to wear something that's going to be warm enough and protect you from, you know, whatever is the particular elements you're dealing with. That's appropriate. You know, if it's rain or snow, it's got to be waterproof. If it's wind, then it's got to be windproof. You know, like that. If it's cold, then it's got to be warm. So then the kid knows, you know, how to put, see, that's why you call them mature, because they know what coat or what sweater to put on when they're going outside. Well, kids will go out with nothing or the wrong thing, because they haven't been taught the principle. Does that make sense? So the Vedic is teach the principle, then how to apply it to the detail as much as possible. And then they, through their own practice and contemplation and association, will develop the rest. Is that okay? Did we get somewhere there now, or okay?
Just one at the other end of the spectrum, when there are certain people who act in a very, they may be in ignorance, but due to their conditioning, they're very violent. They're not the many poor shatras, but they're leaders who are, you know, killing many people by their personal or through their instruments. So is it dangerous to consider them to be innocent?
Is it dangerous to consider them innocent? You could philosophically, they're innocent means just like Maharaj Pichinabarhi shot. He's killing, you know, so many thousands of animals and his sacrifices, and according to Shastra, but he doesn't really realize that they're, by the killing the animals according to scripture, he's not sinful, but it doesn't mean he won't get a reaction. You know what I'm saying? Because meat means mangsa, mam saha, means mam I kill you, saha, you kill me. That's what it means. So he was unaware of that. And he was unaware of the, you know, the element of you know, transcendental knowledge of that, because he was only surrounded by karmakandi Brahmins. So no one ever talked about spiritual. So he didn't know it existed. So then in this way you could say is they don't know the reactions they're going to get in all this, but you don't call them innocent in that means. In other words, they're planning and, you know, they're self-centered and they're dealing, you know, how you say, it's not subconscious. It's, you know, observably, you know, conscious of their endeavor. So in this way you say they're not innocent. But ultimately, philosophically, they don't really know what's going on. Therefore, if they really knew, they wouldn't put themselves in that position, like Magrari the Hunter. No, not Magrari the Hunter. Dasaratnakar. He was a big, like, highway robber. You've heard of Dasaratnakar? You probably have, but you don't know. Dasaratnakar. He was, you know, a big highway robbery. So he would, you know, stop people on the road, kill people, steal all their things, like this and that. So then one day Narad Muni came along, and then he stopped him. You know, and so Narad Muni thought, well, let's have some fun here, right? So he asked him, okay, you want to steal and all this and that, and so that's okay. But why are you doing this? You know, I mean, is there a reason, or are you just stealing just for fun, or I mean, what's your reason? He says, no, I have, you know, my family I have to maintain and all those things. So I'm stealing so I can take care of my family. And then Narad Muni says, but in stealing then, you know, and killing people like that, then you're getting sinful reaction. So since you're doing this to maintain your family, are they willing also to take part in that reaction? You know, because you're doing this for them, so naturally... you having such close relationship with them, you would then, they would naturally share with you their responsibility, you know, out of the natural intimacy that's there between you, you know, you as family. And then Dasaratnakar was thinking, yeah, of course they would. So Narad Muni is sure, you know, says, mm-hmm. so, you know, because he's a sage and all that, he says, I'm a Brahmin, I say, I'll, you know, says, you go home and ask them, you know, and if they agree that that's what they're there, then you rob me. You know, like that. But if not, then you should think about it. You know, why are you robbing for people who aren't willing to share the result? So then, Dasaratnakar said, okay, you know, so, you know, he says, but you better not go away, or, you know, I'll come find you. And I says, no, I'm a sage. I say, I'll be here, I'll be here. So he went home, and then, you know, very pleasantly went and, you know, told the family, you know, I'm stealing and killing and doing all these things for you. So, and that gives a sinful reaction. So naturally, you're in your mind, you're sharing these reactions with me, isn't it? And they said, of course not. It says you're the one killing and all that, and you know you're the doing all that stuff. It's your business. You're supposed to take care of us. That's all. That's what it is. How you do it, that's your business. He says so. Your reactions are all yours. Nothing to do with us. But he was very, you know, shocked, you know. So he went back to Narad Muni and said, yeah, you're right, and this and that. So then Narad Muni instructed him in the emotional science, and then he went on to be known as Valmiki Muni, who wrote the Ramayana. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that means there is hope for the Scottish Yatra. If Dasaratnakar can become Valmiki, then you guys got a chance, right? Like that. Yes?
It's where you go and preach to people, then it seems sometimes when the word like self-speak is quite clear. So how do we transfer that clarity to people? You know, in terms of, it seems like, you know, I've been preaching for many, many years, and people have to come and understand this very simple philosophy, and they've got to pick up. What is it that stops them from understanding, or what is it that within us stops us from having purity to
Oh, okay. It means of course there's the element of the purity in the presentation, but at the same time there's also the principle of communication. It means you have to speak in a way that they understand. So in other words, you have to use words they'll understand, you have to use examples they'll understand. You have to make it very clear what your point is, and everything naturally, logically goes back to that point. Right? And then the conclusion should be something that's practical for them that they can apply. So it's just a matter of trying different ways and approaches till you find one that works for them. Because each person is going to be different. They may fit into kind of general categories, but still within that general category, they're going to have an individual nature like that. So, you know, you first want to identify the category, if it's not obvious, by looking at them, and then from there the specific detail. But generally, if you're talking about, you know, every living entity wants to be happy, so that's generally a good place to start. And, you know, and to be happy, you need to control your environment, right? But the problem is since we can't control our environment, we're not actually happy. So that means someone else is controlling the environment. So if we're in connection with the person who's controlling the environment, then we can become happy, right? You know? Does that make sense? So you just find what works for them, like that. Notice, use the simplest language, use their language if need be, you know, like that. But, you know, get the point across.
What about the, how to say, well, the best thing to do is give Prabhupada's book.
Yeah, of course.
So, obviously, we have to give everyone a final reflection.
Yeah, yeah. No, it means give the book. So, but the point is still, you have to convince them that the book's worth having. You know, and if you just sell them the book, then that's good. It'll be in their house. Maybe they'll read it. Maybe they won't. And hopefully, they won't. You know, they won't feel that. How you say what you said the book is? It's not what they were. You know, so that they'll feel that there's some discrepancy between, you know, the process of sale and, you know, what it is that they have now in possession. But also, if in the process you can convince them that it's valuable for them to actually read, then that would also be good. But if you see it's not someone who's like that, then, you know, you just hope for the best. Because if it's in their house, it does have benefit. At some point, you know, probably says like time bombs. At some point, somebody's going to pick it up and look at it. So if it's not them, it'll be someone else or some relative. I've heard of that where books have been sitting in someone's house and that's, they would go and visit their house as some relative or like that, you know, grandparent or aunt or that, and then one day they picked up the book and that's how they became the devotee. So, you know, so it's it always has benefit, and the book will say more than we, so that's why you don't spend a long time, you know, preaching this, that, the book will say it. But if you can, in some way, it would be possible to explain the importance of it, then that's good, because you'll inspire them to read and take advantage of the book, like that. But if you meet someone who's read the book and then they come with some questions, then you would explain more to them. Because the idea is selling the book is the beginning of a process. So the process is not that you're selling the book to make a person who's going to sell more books, right? You're selling the book to make a person who's going to take up and practice Krishna consciousness. And as part of their process of Krishna consciousness, they're going to distribute books. You understand? You know, it's not like you have a temple so that you can have people who stay in the temple that can go out and collect money to maintain the temple. And therefore you have a temple for people to stay in who can go out and maintain, get money to maintain the temple. No, it's not like that. You have the temple where people can there. That's a service. It's one of the ways they can engage themselves. You know, keep body, mind, and words engaged. So they collect, but that's not, the purpose is not to maintain the temple. The purpose is to maintain an environment in which people can render service to the Lord. Right? That's what the temple's for. Does that make sense? So that's what we were meaning on, like, what on Prabhu's question, is that it's the mentality that's behind it, the purpose behind it. It's not specifically the activity. You know, Prabhu gives that in the Gita, the second chapter, is that the devotee goes to the market, the karmi goes to the market. The devotee cooks, the karmi cooks. The devotee eats, the karmi eats. But there's a world of difference between them, even though they may be cooking, buying the same vegetables, cooking the same preparations, eating it in the same way. So their technique may be exactly the same, but it's the mentality that's important, like that. Is that okay? Okay. Yeah.
Maharaji, he said, example with Maharaji, he was taking the blame on himself, even though he went to war because he was Krishna's desire. However, he was lamenting. He was lamenting, which is like a sign of some ignorance or problem. It was an exemplary.
Was it exemplary? No, Prabhupada mentions in the previous purport. King Yudhishthira, though he was not expected to become aggrieved like a common man, became deluded by worldly affection by the will of the Lord, just as Arjuna was apparently deluded. Right? Okay, all this was perfectly known to Maharaj Yudhishthira, but by the will of the Lord he became just like a common man, because there was another great idea behind this delusion. The king would be instructed by Bhishma as Arjuna was instructed by the Lord himself. Right, and also in that is Krishna's already tried to explain to him and it's failed, but Bhishma will explain and he'll succeed. So then Krishna is putting the devotee as even superior to him. So one is he's giving an opportunity that everyone will be able to appreciate the teachings of Bhishma. Then at the same time, everyone will be able to appreciate the greatness of Bhishma. Right. So the devotee, Krishna likes the devotee to be actually more prominent than himself. You know what I'm saying? That's natural. Like, you have a parent and a mother and a child. Who's the prominent one? Right? It's the child. Like that. You know, or you have husband and wife. Who's the prominent one? Right? Okay. Right answer. there was a suspense there for a moment. But, right answer, right answer. Okay? You understand? Or for the leader, then it's the citizens. Before, you know, in other words, the feminine is always the predominant element for the masculine. You understand? Because Krishna is God. He is all-knowing, all-seeing. He is everything, everywhere. But that's great, but it's only got so much taste. Right? It's nice, but it's only got so much taste. Therefore, Krishna expands his creation. Right? And in expanding his creation, then he interacts with it, but he interacts with it on its platform, right? He deals with Mother Yashoda according to her. He deals with the cowherd boys according to their desire and their mentality. He deals with the gopis according to theirs, right? So therefore, the natural state of the masculine is to center it around the feminine, but because they lead, they're actually the center. The man is the center by leading. But the activities that go on are centered around, he leads in activities that center around the dependent. Does that make sense? Right? Means the mother is the leader because she performs all the activities first that are based around the child, feeding them, dressing them, clothing them. You know, the child doesn't even ask, she's already feeding them or bathing them. You know, kid doesn't say, yes, I want to take 3 baths a day, and can you arrange that, mom? You know, no, they don't say like that. You know, so therefore, the mother takes the lead, but it's in activities that are centered around the dependent. You understand? So that's the balance. So that's where the masculine is the center, but at the same time, the feminine is also the center. Understand? So that's the thing. You understand this point, you understand how to deal in all relations. Everything will be successful. To the degree you can practice that, it'll be good. You don't understand that, it will always be hit and miss. You know, because maybe you'll say the right answer, maybe you won't. And if you don't, then it may be 3 days of non-communication. So you want to avoid that. that okay? Something else? Anything else? Or? No? Oh, okay.
Can you talk about if we can't be happy, then we want to at least learn how to control our environment. And if we can't do that, then we should want to know similarly can. And referring to Krishna or to the devotee there.
No, what we're saying is that the living entity wants to control and enjoy, but you control to enjoy, right? Control means you're secure, right? Does that make sense? So it's just like you'll see is that the feminine element of controlling, like sometimes the men will feel they're being controlled by the women, but that control is only to establish security. You understand? Because if you're not secure, how does someone dependent, how can they be happy, right? Does that make sense? Well, masculine is, you know, controls the environment, so the activities that they want to do, they can get the result, because getting the result is their happiness. You know what I'm saying? So, in either case, control and enjoyment is used. Right? But what I was meaning was, is people want to be happy, that's the point. So they're trying to control the environment to be happy. But it's obvious no one's in control, actually, of everything in their lives. So that means someone else is in control. So therefore, we mentioned that, therefore, if we feel secure in the relationship with the person that actually is in control, then we'll actually be happy. Does that make sense? No one's in control of their own environment. That means they try to be, but it doesn't quite work. So as I'm saying, you try to some degree, but ultimately the one who's controlling the whole thing is God. So the reason you want to control your environment is so you're secure. Because then only if you're secure you can be happy. Right? You know, so it's like if, you know, I lay out, you know, the biggest, you know, fanciest buffet and the fanciest things and play the nicest music and the nicest environment and then, you know, sit down there with a, you know, a big machine gun and point it at you and say, enjoy! You know? Like that. And now and again, you know, I shoot a chandelier or, you know, or something like that. Then you're not really going to be able to enjoy the environment. You know what I mean? Like that. So that's the point, is that unless you're secure, you can't enjoy. You understand? So that's just as a side point. That means this is a side point completely. It means something to you or may not, but basically by the looks of everyone else in this room, it would be. Is if a woman's upset, it's because she's insecure. There's no other reason. She only gets upset if the activity that has been done by another person creates insecurity. Right? So that's the point. So the living entity, being feminine, if they're insecure, they can't enjoy. So their frustration in enjoying is because actually they're not insecure. So they're trying to control their environment to create that security, but they can't. So therefore we say, turn to the person who is in control of the environment. Then you can actually be secure. Then you can actually be happy. Does that make sense now? It means what the logic was used there before? Yeah, okay. That was what was meant by what we were explaining to him. Just it was, you know, maybe not as, you know, how you say it, well, as developed. Is that okay? Okay, so then we'll end now, I guess. And unless there's another, if you have something more, we'll go on. If not, then.
This is an example that I used this. It was the same situation with Arjuna. I think he was facing in ignorance by your life. So that it's the whole, this method could be like a disposition could be like so.
Mm-hmm. Is that? Yeah, yeah, no, that's, it means that you're asking if that's what happened.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's why Prabhupada mentions that here. He puts this in parentheses, just because Arjuna was apparently deluded. Like that. this sort of comes out because these are great instructions, right? It means that Bhagavad Gita is you know, the basis of spiritual understanding, right? It's the ABCs of spiritual, you know, philosophy and all that. So it's very important. And Bijana's instructions are very important actually on how an administrator runs his kingdom. Because there's so many laws that are there, but what is the proper way to put them together and the mentality and all that, then Bijana Dev brings that out. So then, between the Dharma Shastra and Bijana's instructions, then you know very much how to properly run a kingdom. You know, it just becomes perfect like that, because it's the realization of somebody, right? Manu is the rules, as Krishna spoke them to Brahma, Brahma to Bhrigu, and then Bhrigu to the sages. So that's all the rules, but then how that's all applied and what would be the mentality of the king and how he'll approach those rules, that comes out in Bhishma's instructions. Like that. So therefore, when it's heard from the devotees, it's even better. Right? You know what I'm saying? So in other words, it's Krishna's instructions to Brahma, Brahma to what do you call it? To Bhrigu, Bhrigu to the sages, and that's been studied by Bhishma, and now Bhishma speaks on that. You know? And then you get that's in Mahabharata. So that's the delineation of, you know, the clear, like, scientific delineation of Varnashram there. We have it in Bhagavatam where it's Krishna spoken to Brahma, Brahma spoken to Narad, Narad speaks to Yudhishthir, right? And that we have in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam. But we see there it's much more geared towards using Varnashram for spiritual upliftment, right? Rather than just what is the proper way to deal with everything in your kingdom. You know what I'm saying? Which is how Bhishma will be dealing with it. Does that make sense? That's why out of 5 chapters on Varnashram, 3 are talking about like Paramahamsa and this and that, because, you know, generally I think the first 2 chapters, that's Varnashram, because it's just the rules. But it's the mentality and how you approach it that's actually most important. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay? Or? Yeah, okay.
Sometimes dealing with, for instance, the husband and wife relationship, there always seems to be a breakdown in communication, about arguing, etc. So that was.
You're talking. Oh, you're not just talking for how you say for the benefit of others and that. Like that. So, when you get home, then it was for others, right?
What do you mean we have problems? We never argue. Who said we argue? Okay.
Yeah.
And it seems to be based on this misidentification with a male and female role.
Yeah.
So I just wondered if you could, if, you know, when there's a breakdown in communication in terms of you're trying to say something and you're just not getting anywhere, and does that understanding just seems to disappear?
Yeah, so you got about. You guys aren't interested in breakfast then. You got about 3 hours. What we can do is I'll answer now, but if you really want to get into details, then let's say tomorrow afternoon, then you could bring up questions. I see a lot of heads going on this. On this, because that you could go on all day. You know, so Mara said we can start at. Prabhupada said we could start at 2:30, go till 7 if we want, so, you know, whatever. Basic principle is this. I mean, there's a few principles at work. That's why it'll be easier to get into it then, because you can go through all the elements. I mean, there's a few main principles that if you understand, then you can make it work. It still takes practice, because the point is, you're an individual, your wife is an individual. So exactly how to apply the point. You know, it's just like we wear, you know, a dhoti and a kurta, you know, but you have a particular size of what kurta you'd wear, or for how you like or what work you're doing, a particular way you wear your dhoti. You know, if you're dressing, just let's say in the temple, you can wear the pleats down the front. But let's say you're working in the kitchen, you probably take them and tuck them in. You know, so there's some adjustment is there, but that's... But the principle is always the same, right? You know, it's still a dhoti, it's still a kurta. So, you know. in here you're working with, I mean, of course, there is the point of, is the element of the male-female, is if that's not understood, then it will be a problem. So if the man is acting female, the female is acting male, then it will. But the point is it's the male is acting 100% male, the female can act 100% female. But if the male asks 90%, that means the woman has to ask 10% male. It means they have to have that balance. So that's why in the society, the more the men are feminine, the more the women become masculine. You know what I'm saying? You know, so it's like, let's say you're down on the construction site, you know, and it's lunchtime, like that. And, you know, you got five or six people sitting around there, and they're laughing and joking and drinking their beer and whacking each other on the back. And one of them happens to be a lady, right? So she's acting in that way because they're not protecting her. So she has to take care of herself. So she can't keep up with the boys and laugh and joke and whack them on the back just like they do. Then they're going to exploit. You know what I'm saying? So then they have to meet, you know, so she's just as tough as they are. Because they're not acting masculine. You know, they're acting on their own platform, this is how I want to behave, and not considering she's a woman, so therefore I have to deal according to her needs. So they don't fulfill those needs, so she has to bridge that gap. You know what I'm saying? So temporarily she can do that. But that same woman now is going to have to go and have a man that really takes care of her to be able to balance that. You know? Otherwise you're going to have one tough, frustrated lady. You know? Like that. Does that make sense? So, it's a balance of these two. So, if it's understood, then it can manifest properly. You know what I'm saying? So that would be one principle. Another principle, as we would say, is since we mentioned it, we'll mention it. No, what would be in better order? Okay, just in light of that point of what we meant of security. So an argument comes up because of security. Okay, now let us. We'll explain that more after. We'll go now to the other side. Is that another principle would be is feminine means it's always moving, always changing. Masculine means fixed. Feminine means always changing. Means the principle is that the feminine nature never reacts the same twice in any given situation. Right? That's why In the relationship, you have to work on principle, not detail, right? And what worked for your friend with his wife has absolutely nothing to do with your situation. You learn, if you know the principles, you can see how he applied the principle. That will be valuable to him, but if you try to deal with your wife the way he dealt with him, you will fail, right? That guaranteed, because each woman is different. Right? Like that. So, you know, when the boys sit around the pub and, you know, work everything out, that's why when they go home, it still doesn't work. You know? Because that worked for the other guy's wife at that moment. But if that same situation is presented again, she will not respond the same again. Right? That's how they're designed. Right? Because the point is Krishna is living eternally. Right? And he is unlimited. So therefore, you only need to perform one activity actually once, and the experience of it is eternal. Therefore, the next time the activity is done, it's slightly changed. But because Krishna is unlimited, and because Radharani is the unlimited counterpart, feminine counterpart, she's unlimited. Therefore, every time they interact in any situation, it's always slightly different. You understand? So, you know, one could say, well, we're not, but that's the whole point. Is women are actually meant for Krishna, not for us. But we're here trying to be Krishna, so then, you know, you gotta play your part. You know, it's kind of like, you know, kind of like the thing is, you want it, therefore you gotta do it. You know, that kind of, you ever had that kind of thing, you know? You know, the kid's doing something that the father's told him not to do. and like that, and he keeps doing it, and so then the father says, all right, you want to do it? Okay, now you're going to do it right, like an adult. Now get in there, now it's no more fun, you know, now it's like work. You know, okay, you want to be the big man, now be the big man, here are the rules. You know, so that's what, you know, being a husband means here. You know, you want to be, you want to be the man, okay. Here are the rules, go for it, like that, okay. You know, fun's over, okay. Okay. Like that. So it's never the same twice. So understanding this, you can never get, this is where the principle of innocent comes in. In the spiritual world, it's done for Krishna's pleasure. Here, it's done by the modes of nature, the hormones, they do it. Because there, you actually have someone who has a feminine relationship with Krishna, so it's spontaneous. Here, it's just, you know, how you say, by chance. You know, this life you're male, this life you're female, this life you're human, this life you're something else. So, therefore, it has to be generated mechanically. So here, it seems the mechanics are these wonderful things called hormones, right? And they create that unlimited kind of thing, on one sense. So then, so just because it worked last time doesn't mean it'll work this time, right? Does that make sense? So therefore, the man should never be disturbed or frustrated why the women aren't logical and why they don't do the same, because they don't. That means, if you expect them to be, that's called the man. So if you want to deal with something logical that does everything the same every time, you know, it goes to the same you know, diner and orders the same, you know, how you say, preparation and the same coffee for the last 20 years on lunch break, then hang out with a man, you know. But, you know, you hang out with a woman for a different experience, right? You hang out with them for variety. Like that. So if you know that's what's there, then it's variety, not insanity. Right? If you're expecting it to be stable, you call it insanity. If you know it's always going to be different, you call it variety. You know what I'm saying? Like these ads you come in on the plane, they had it's a bank advertisement or something, and they have someone playing, a lady playing a sitar, and it says, how do you say, something like noise, right? And then it has another lady there playing electric guitar, you know, and it says music. And then the next picture is the lady playing the sitar, says music. And then the next is the lady playing the guitar, says noise, you know. So it's just perception, you know. So that's the whole thing, is it's either insanity or it's variety. It depends on your perception, right? So if you're expecting women to behave as men, it's insanity. If you're expecting women to behave as women, it's called variety. So as we, you know, so it goes back to the first point. If we understand the roles, then the problem goes away, because you know what you're dealing with, you know, like that. You know, someone who's dealing with horses and is good at it knows what a horse is and how they'll always behave. And they know it's, you know, what... what are the, you know, various options that will come up, but what will come up you don't know, you know. You go to the corral, the horse may be standing on the side, maybe on the other side, maybe in the middle, you know. Maybe as soon as you come, they'll notice you, maybe they won't. That you can't say, but you know that they'll respond as a horse does. So in the same way as how a woman will react, that you can never say, but you know that they will always react as a woman. So if you understand the principles of on which it's based, then you can try to then put yourself, you know, as close to that as possible. Deal with the moment. And, does that make sense? Okay. So now, on that, so we're getting to your point. It's just so many principles have to be established to actually answer it. Then you have, because, now we'll go into some philosophy here. This will be important, let's say, in tomorrow's discussion, is that you have in this, everything is sambandha abhideya prayojana, because it's based on the satchidananda, right? The potencies, eternality, knowledge, and bliss. So technically in this, when Krishna is Atmarama, he's just eternality, right? Knowledge and bliss aren't really manifest because they're non-different from him. But the main experience is existence. So he is the existence of everything, right? So that means knowledge and bliss are dependent upon existence, right? So that makes your bliss or your happiness actually a feminine element. Does that make sense? So the masculine element is existence, the feminine element is bliss, right? So this is a very, very important thing in understanding how to apply like that. So now, that's why the man is looking to the woman for happiness, but he's not looking for security. He's looking for happiness, because he is secure, he is male. But the woman, she is happy, but she's looking to the man for security. Right? So now this is where the point comes in. Is that... yeah, we'll just directly answer. There's another element, but we'll see if that comes up, or otherwise we'll deal with it tomorrow. Yeah, it means just, you know, the element of okay, this is that there is a fight. You ask that it's fighting, like that. There's another explanation why there's fighting, right? Because the women will generate fighting, like that, you know, like that. But here's, in fighting, in other words, dealing with a specific case means something has happened that you've spoken or dealt or used the tone of voice that created insecurity. Means a relationship is there, it's understood to be to this degree of depth, you've done something that there's a doubt in that. Immediately they'll become angry. Just as a man becomes angry in the frustration of getting done what he wants to do. Right? You know, in other words, the man is looking for happiness, means result. So he performs abhideya or process to get a result. The woman deals with the process to get security. You understand? So they're both, that's how they meet, you know, from the two sides. So therefore, you've done something that has created some variety of doubt. And so even though, let us just take, you know, from the masculine viewpoint, that the woman herself has actually done something observably wrong. Okay? Now, in dealing with that, then you speak in a way that makes the woman feel insecure. It's something harsh, or the word you used, or this or that. So what she's angry about, which the man is wondering, why is she angry? Because she's wrong. Is because you've dealt in such a way that she feels insecure. So therefore, you're wrong. Right? And the man is thinking, no, I'm right, and I'm not letting this one go, and she's a woman, she's got a submissive system, she's got to come forward and say she's wrong. It'll never happen. Because this goes back to our first thing, of what we said of leadership. You want the woman to be humble, and you want her to acknowledge her fault, but you want her to do it first, means you're taking the feminine role and expecting her to be... No, you have to do it first, means she's wrong on in the performance of the activity and getting the result of the activity, which is what's important for the male. But for the woman, that's not what's important. They do activities for experience, not to get results. Results give experiences, but it's the experience of it, it's not the thing that's important. That's why when you give them something, they get something, and then they want something else. And it's like, what happened? You got what you wanted. You know, but it's like, no, that experience is over. Now the next one, you know, okay? Like that. So, right? So then in there, so the man, he takes the lead in the masculine position. He comes forward and apologizes. But he doesn't do it in such a way that now she'll apologize. No, he does it completely that's all there is. There's no other agenda. Because if there is other agenda, they won't surrender. Because you have agenda, therefore they're going to keep agenda. You drop it, then they'll drop it. But in other words, until it's completely 100% sincere, they won't drop it. Right? And so then the man, in other words, the men down at the pub, their idea of masculine, they'll say, oh, that's, you caved in, you know, that's being, you know, feminine, your head pecked. No, that's being masculine. Sitting down at the pub and saying that they're going to, they should have done this, they should have done that, no, you got to take the tough line, that's feminine. That's actually feminine. Because when the women sit around and talk about these things, that's how they talk. Believe it or not. You know, like that. So that's the masculine. Then you'll break that. So now the point is if you know that, then and in this why we always use the word moment, because that's what the Shastra uses, because that's what you're dealing with, is moment means 1/11th of a second. That's all it takes. 1/11th of a second miscalculation and you've gone from heaven to hell, you know, in 1/11th of a second. Like that. So one word, one tone of voice, or lack of that, whatever it is, you know, in other words, one moment of improper response, you'll get that. Right? So that's why, so if in that moment you see it, then in the next moment you can correct it. But if you don't, as long as you don't recognize and you don't take actually the masculine role, it will go on that long. You know, so like the normal thing is 3 days is all the man can handle of, you know, hell. So therefore, then he caves in. You know, but the point is he could do that within the same second. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. That's the method. And it's always humility. There's not another... And very important, if you don't want it to, how you say, be repercussions, is when the woman does admit that they're wrong, you don't say, I said so. Never say that. You know what I'm saying? It's not that it's a technique. You know what I'm saying? Means these are things you can read of in books. But what we're explaining is what's behind what you read of in the books. You know, in other words, the technicality, what's going on, what is actually male and female. This you won't get in the books. They'll tell you these techniques, you know. But the point is why it's not is because for means the nature is this brings up the other thing of just means energy always moves, right? Anything that can register energy, it's always moving. You have a middle line and it's all how much is going above, it's going that much below. You increase it above, you increase it that much below. Very important. Because that way, as happy as marital bliss is, that means the possibility is that equal amount below. Like that. So, therefore, the more you want it to be happy, the more you have to be willing to deal with in this method that was just said, of being humble that when it goes that way. Because the farther it goes that way, the more humble you have to be. But you do it, then it will swing back, that because that's the way energy works. Right? So that's okay. Does that make sense? Okay. So, and it's indirect, right? Because if it's direct, that's men. But the point is the feminine is it's indirect, right? Because it's not the field; it's the experience of the field. So therefore. The direct delineation of something is not what's important, it's the experience of it. So therefore, women will use words that indicate the experience, not necessarily the situation. That's why they'll say things that don't seem to make sense. But if you look at it in connection with what experience or environment that they want to be in to experience, it makes perfect sense. Because they're discussing environment. You know, men will generally discuss situation. The difference being here is they're both the same. It's just one is what is the experience you're getting, the other is the, you know, in other words, the woman saying, you know, this is an example from one of these books. Okay, woman says, you know, why don't we go out to dinner tonight? You know, we never go out to dinner. And then the husband thinks, what do you mean? We just went out to dinner 2 days ago. What she's meaning is, I would like to be with you in the experience of being out at dinner. You know? So, therefore they'll say like that. Because it's, you know, they don't mean that we've never been out to dinner. Of course they have. But what they mean is, this is what we want to do. So never means it's been, even though it's been 2 days, to them it's been that long. You know, in experience. You know, just like you're impatient, then, you know, 2 seconds seems like an hour, you know, or, a moment, 1/11th of a second is 12 years or more, right, you know, in separation. So that's what it means, you know. Or maybe only 3 months ago you went out to dinner and then you suggest, oh, we always go out to dinner because she doesn't want to. Because it's that close, oh, we just went and I've been there, done that. But if it was, we went out, that was so nice, you know, it's been so long, so that, you know what I'm saying? It's a whole different thing. So that's sort of what they say is not, is indicates what they mean, but it's not literally what they mean necessarily. So now this, now we're going back to the point of why you never say told you so. Because when a woman does bring what she says and what she means to the same place at the same time, it's a very rare thing. And if she does it, you have to take it in the moment. You can't use any past. Right? Because generally the man will go to the past because, means if we look at it, sambandha abhideya prayojana, that, I mean, how you say, eternality, knowledge, and bliss. When we're taking eternality, which is sambandha, is masculine, but when it flips in the material world, you know, existence becomes ignorance, the mode of ignorance, you know. It means that abhideya, you know, the chit potency or knowledge becomes the, the activities become the, you know, passion. And your, you know, happiness and all that becomes goodness, right? So the masculine position then in the material world is on ignorance, because they create the field, which is ignorance, right? So then he'll go, told you so, because the field was like this and you didn't operate it properly, so I told you so. So that makes sense to men. So you say that to men and they go, yeah, you're right, you know, they respond nicely. Women don't, because you're taking it out of the moment to the past. So you're taking it from in the moment, because the moment's goodness. So you're taking it from the feminine, centered on the feminine. Like we said before, is you, the man takes the initiative to perform the activity, but centered around the need of the female. So that means it's in the moment. So it has to, so therefore you've taken it from the moment, the mode of ignorance. You've taken it from them as the center to yourself. That's why they get angry when you say it. You know, it's just against nature. It's not like right or wrong, because that doesn't matter. Because if they've said, if a woman ever says she's wrong, she means it. Like that. And she expects it to be taken, and just everything before that dropped completely. Because their ego is so big that for them to say that, that's very big. You know, a man's ego is big, but it kind of has a definition. Right? And that's why you can have so many men in the room, because their ego is only so big and they can move around and not, it doesn't bump into each other. But a feminine's ego takes up the universe. There's no room for anybody else. So if you make them the center, then it works. Like that. So therefore, even though, so if they say they're wrong, that's big. That's monumental. Like that. So never, even though it came in a moment, even though it's said very lightly, even though it's said because they're hoping that you won't take it to the past, because that'll hurt, you know, it'll make the ego hurt more. They're hoping you won't, so therefore if you don't, they're very happy. And it'll just move forward. So that means no matter what they've done wrong, if they actually sincerely say they're wrong, accept it, move forward. It's different with the man. A man then you can deal with, okay, justice, this, that. Woman, just that they've said, I'm sorry, to them is big punishment. You know, it's serious disciplining. Right? Because that's what they're getting you to do. You've done something what they consider wrong. They don't talk, they don't this, that, until you say you're wrong and mean it. You know what I'm saying? So when you do that, you know, as we said before, that's you taking, means the man does, because he's taking the lead. So in the same way, if you reverse that, if they do that, then that means they've been disciplined. So if a woman to ever say she's wrong, like, because you'll find most situations, it'll come up that they could say they won't. It'll just be a silence and it's just left and moved on. The subject's changed. That means they know they're wrong, but they're not willing to say anything. So don't push the point. Otherwise, then another, you know, thing. But if they do say, that's very serious. Always take it seriously. Never then say, okay, now's my chance. No. That's there. It means you want the relationship to work, it's your chance to make the relationship to work, not to prove that you're the man and you're right. Who cares? You're the man, you're right, you're alone, and, you know, she's off somewhere else. You know, then what's the meaning? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like that. Did we say anything wrong? That's horse's mouth. You know what I'm saying? It means this is all new to you, but they've always known this. And then just basically, bottom line is this: they're waiting around for you guys to do what we've just said. So it means us explaining this, maybe for them, they've felt this, but maybe they could or could not articulate it. But it's not new to them. What we're explaining is new to you, because the soul is feminine and they're playing a feminine part. Works fine, right? Here it's the soul playing a masculine part. You got to learn the part. You know what I'm saying? So that's why these things seem foreign to the man, you know, but to the women it's not like that. So it's this is the part, and this is exactly what they want you to do. And if you'll do that, then you won't find a happier woman like that. But you have to do it all the time, right? Because motive goodness means in the moment. Constant. You can't say, okay, did that and sit back. No, because as soon as you sit back, it goes into ignorance. Then it's just pure masculinity without the expansion into the feminine. Right? Then it goes back to just Krishna Atmaram. Yeah, I did that. Then it's Atmaram. But Atmaram doesn't have a relationship with the energy. You understand? So that's why, unless you're always interacting constantly, therefore, that's why it's normal in the Vedic culture that women are separate from men in their duties, because that gives an opportunity, therefore, the men to be with men and women to be with women. Because to be together means they always have to be operating these principles. And that's how you say, a lot of pressure. But at the same time, it gives the nice result. You know what I'm saying? But at some point, the living entity, it means the conditioned nature has to be with its own kind, so that it's not under that, you know, every moment trying to judge what's going on. Because women know what women think, men know what men think, so they can be together and relax. So that's why it would be the men go out to work, they have the time, they're with the men. But nowadays everything's mixed, so that's why it makes it even more difficult. Like that. But the same principles work, it'll always work. Like that. Is that okay? Like that. Yes.
There is this capacity that's coming from the woman to have protection from the man.
Where does it come from? Because energy is always dependent on the energetic. Like that. It's just the design. Energy needs to, because in other words, okay, yeah, it's security. Okay, so you could take, another way to look at this would be, there would be, we'll take this again, means we've taken this of Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. So Sambandha is, you know, we've taken as the masculine element. Then Abhideya is the point of interaction. Prayojana is the, what do you call it? Prayojana is the feminine, right? You know, the happiness, the experience. Okay, so then we have to take, to define this properly, the sambandha, and divide it into two. There's the field, and there's the attraction to operating the field. Right? Does that make sense? Does it make sense? So the field itself, that's purely masculine. There's nothing feminine about it. That's Krishna's say, the Atmarama. When the field, when the energy expands, then Krishna takes on the attraction to interacting with the field. Because why else will he expand it than to interact with it? Does that make sense? Right? So these are the, now we'll put it, this will do something else here, it'll make it easier if you remember. Therefore, Sankarshan means the field. Right? Because he establishes Dharma or religion, and, you know, destroys the demons, you know, like this, makes everything right. Prajumna is the attractiveness of the field, this attraction, right? But it's still Sambandha, but it's masculine. Then Abhideya is Vasudev, where the pastime goes on, the interaction. Aniruddha, or the result, the mind, the experience, is then the Prayojana. Okay? Just makes sense? Now, having explained that, to explain the question, I have forgot the question. Oh, the dependency, yeah. Okay, so then the point is energy means you can have Sankarshan on his own, right? That's why we'll say Sankarshan, everybody else expands from there. When actually Sankarshan comes to Vasudeva, it's the pastime, that then everything else comes. But as far as the technical, then Sankarshan is there, then Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudeva, Vasudeva come out. Like that. Does that make sense? That's why you get these things where, like TLC will describe, where there's two ways you do it. It's always Sankarshan expanding. You know, you have the Chaturvyuha, then from that expands Sankarshan, then Vasudeva, Prajumna, Aniruddha. Like that, because in one sense, technically, that's what there is. Balaram is Sankarshan. So Balaram expands into everything else, not Krishna. So he expands into Balaram and Dwarka, expands into Krishna and Dwarka, and then Prajumna and Aniruddha. Right? Like that. And then from there comes then, you know, Vaikuntha Sankarshan, and then like that, and then, you know, it just keeps going unlimitedly. And then Mahavishnu expands from Sankarshan. So Sankarshan, because he's the field. Like that. So the point is that's why we say constant, because what happens is the tendency is the man will go into the Sankarshan aspect, but there's no relationship with the feminine. So when you're with a woman, it always has to be in Prajumna. Then there's relationship. Does that make sense? Like that. So that means, therefore, that the existence is there is because it's been expanded from. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's why you see, you know, in general, a normal thing is it doesn't matter what the girl is, it's whatever the boy is, that's what she is. Right? If he's wealthy, she's wealthy. Right? You know, if he's famous, she's famous. If he's got a big place in society, she's got it. You know, he's the, you know, first citizen and she's the first woman. You know, like that. You know, the first lady, you know, like that. You know? Does that make sense? So it's because it works there. So then the point is because when relationship is there, okay, that was what we've been explaining. This is another principle. This is explained by Rupa Goswami, is that you have attraction, right? Okay, we have a field, then within that, so Sankarshan is there, then within that there's attraction. So when attraction is there, then there's an interest to operate the field, right? When that interest increases, that you become attached, right? Krishna says, when you contemplate the objects of the senses, means when you contemplate the field, then you become attached, because then you think, hey, that's nice, and then you become attached. Attached means you need. Attractive means you don't need, but it looks interesting, right? Does that make sense? So then, how do you say? When attachment is there, it means it's crossed over reason, right? Because you're starting with sambandha, then you have prayojana. So knowledge is in avideya, right? I mean, it's in sambandha, sambandha jnana, but you operate, the chit potency is activities done with knowledge. So you've crossed that to come to attachment, right? That's why when you're attracted to something, you logically look at it. You know, but when you're attached to something, it doesn't matter if it makes sense or not. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, this is also an important element. We'll get back to it. Is that, so now, from attachment, then comes consideration. That's the next stage of development. You know, we're talking about depth of relationship. So from attachment comes consideration, right? So that means if the man is attached, he's considerate. Or if the woman is attached, she's considerate, right? That's why she's yelling and screaming and telling you, get out of the house and that, but she's feeding you, right? Or she won't talk to you, but she's feeding you. You know what I'm saying? So that means attachment is still there. So consideration is the next level. From consideration, this is what's very important, is that creates confidence. You understand? So that's why if the man is inconsiderate, then this is the logic how the woman goes. Is if he's not considerate, then actually he's not attached. And if he's not attached, that means it throws it to the other side. So what's my connection? So that's why any inconsideration on the part of the man immediately creates insecurity in the woman, and immediately, therefore, creates frustration. Does that make sense? Right. So that's Rupa Goswami. So just we should stop now. Okay. So then we can discuss more of this the tomorrow afternoon. Like that. Okay. So does that make sense? Because in other words, it is a science. It's something that anybody can do like that. It's just knowing the principles and being, you know, humble and willing to follow. It's Krishna's rules, so being humble enough to follow Krishna's rules. And if you do it, it will be successful. Still, we leave that one unanswered. We'll deal with more is, why would the women create the fight when there's no need for it? Like that. Because they will do it. Like that. Everything's going perfect. So just at this most perfect moment, that's when they'll start to create. You know, you can tell, just the words they use or something, or inferences. It's like on a fight. So if you just keep mellow and nice, it won't turn into one. But in any case, there is a reason. So that's okay. Jai Ho. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Srimad Prabhupada Ki. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki. Janitai Gaur Premanandi Ki.